Welcome to another episode of Million Dollar Stories, where we get to interview authors from all over the world. You know, I love talking to authors because they have the courage to take their thoughts, put it down on a piece of paper, share it with the many, and potentially change their legacy, destiny, and the world. And so if you're looking to write a book out there, I recommend you check out Dream Starters Publishing. We can help you out with wherever you're at in the process. But if you're looking to turn your book into a lead magnet, check out bookmarketingcrm.com. The book that we're talking about today is perfect for you out there. If maybe you're about to go through, or you're going through, or you went through a major shift. Maybe you went through a divorce, and maybe you're creating a new identity. And the book that we're talking about is Untying the Knot, Protecting Your Emotional and Financial Health During Divorce. The author is with us today. Kelly Lavallee, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Well, let's start off with the genesis of this. Now, every time I've seen an individual go through divorce, it is like a ground zero moment. And maybe it's the time that they can build the life that they've always wanted. They can become the person that they put on pause maybe 10, 15, 20 years prior. So it's a reinvention of themselves. It could be very freeing, and it's also very scary. I've seen it, but it also shows me that afterwards, it is a new chapter, and it could potentially be the greatest thing that ever happened to them. So what made you want to write Untying the Knot?
Oh, well, first, I think you're right. It's divorce can be this clearing for something better, but it's sort of like a forest fire. It's incredibly uncomfortable while the clearing is occurring, right? Even if you want it, it's wildly uncomfortable. But I mean, my personal life was impacted by divorce. My parents divorced, when I was born. Nothing personal, I'm sure. But and then I went through a divorce from my high school sweetheart. I'm an accountant. I had a run-of-the-mill corporate practice, and I, was sort of on the sidelines when my clients would get divorced. I think, like most technical advisors, you feel bad, you want to help. And over the course of my accounting practice, just became more and more involved in helping people manage the financial aspect of divorce. So, had a front row seat then to a lot of people going through it, and saw some threads, like just some gaping holes in the way that we as service providers or just like friends and family support people who are going through it. So the book was, it was twofold, like probably most kind of technical books. On the one hand, I really wanted to help because I could see like, here are some glaring things now that I've, like when you're going through it, when you're in the mix of it, it's hard to see how you could maybe do it better. But when you're sort of like on the sidelines, it's easier to see. So on the one hand, I wanted to help. And on the other hand, I wanted to help myself by building my practice.
Yeah. And you bring up the two aspects, emotional and financial toll that it takes on you. I guess both of them get hit hard. But in your opinion, what was it the emotional toll that really put you on maybe a dark path, or maybe even looking at the finances? I've seen some guys go through it and I think it really hurts them financially. And, men have an identity tied to their finances. So, is it basically same with you that both of them hurt, but maybe the emotional toll was way worse?
Yeah. I mean, I think like to back up into my corporate practice where I worked mainly with men who ran big, private companies, so successful guys who probably put a lot of their self-worth into their financial circumstance. And over the course of that practice, I saw, wow, we wrap a whole bunch of story and identity and meaning around money. Like it's not just a tool to buy and sell stuff over time, and if we're unaware of what we're wrapping around it, then I think that it can lead to some challenges in our life and the way we relate to money. And if you add in divorce, which pumps your emotional temperature up to 10, like then all of that story and meaning that we wrap around money is now magnified because we're scared and stressed and mad. Often, most people who are going through divorce are some mix of those things. It just really even magnifies the mess that we can make of our financial life. And so when I initially wrote the book, I wrote this sort of like how to, you know, be a good person while you get divorced. And then I had an identity crisis and thought, who am I to write that book? And then I wrote another one. So it, you know, sat on my hard drive. And then I wrote another one just strictly about the money. Like, I'm a CPA. I can write about the money. And then it sat there because it was boring AF. But, no one would buy that book. But what I came to was really like, you need both, like in order to navigate the business of divorce, and sorry to say, but a big part of it is like, it's the unraveling of a business deal, a partnership. You have to get your emotions and your thoughts straight, like accepting that you are in a super difficult time and you're not going to be, you know, your most rational, but to do your best to get that foundation sorted so that you can manage the finances well. Like, so that you could be self-aware, like, oh, you know, I'm trying to punish this person by really digging into this stupid financial detail because I'm so mad at them. It just helps you essentially manage the financial part better, because you don't have time when you're getting divorced. Like, you're dealing with the emotional crap and you are negotiating this business deal, and you don't have time to say, I'm just going to get my heart and mind right, and then I'll do this business deal. It's happening at the same time.
Hmm. And you, I'm looking through your bio. It says that nowadays you help women navigate complex divorces, right? So you've turned your mess into a message. And I guess maybe once you went through it, you realize how hard it was and how you could help them. So once you went through it, did you notice that maybe you had a certain strength that individuals started coming to you with questions, and you were able to provide advice and were able to be sort of a mentor after you completed what we call the hero's journey? You complete something that is very difficult, but other people look up to you for some reason because they want to accomplish the same thing. You're able to keep your head on your shoulders and not lose your mind and able to flourish afterwards. So did you just automatically lean in on being the mentor for people going through what you went through?
I mean, in terms of like mentorship and being able to support people, I don't think it's vital that you've walked in their shoes, but it is helpful. It's helpful for you because you can empathize more effectively. And I think that it's easier for people to be vulnerable with you if you can say, like, I've been there, and not from a place of I've been there and I did it so much better than you, so let me teach you. But like, I've been there. I know how hard it is. I made some mistakes, and I'd love to be able to save you from those mistakes. So I definitely think that you can help people from a place of, hey, I got it perfectly right the first time. But in my experience, you know, intimacy, really being able to connect with people and share your wisdom is probably more effective after you've suffered through what they're going through. And I will say, like, when I got divorced, I mean, I've been married twice. I married my high school sweetheart, and when we divorced, we didn't have that much. Okay, so from a financial perspective, it was relatively simple. But I mean, I've walked through sort of the emotional pain of it, and just borne witness over like three decades to how our, like I said, our emotions and thoughts and like feelings at a deep level impact our financial life. And so I'm just trying to use all of that experience in a way that can really help people who are suffering. Like, I think a lot of people suffer in the area of finances, and not necessarily when they're getting divorced, but in their married life, in their business, there's quite a bit of emotional suffering around it. But in particular, it's super magnified when you're getting divorced. Because no matter how much you have, like, I've worked with people who have enough money that us regular people think, how could you possibly be afraid? Like, there's so much here to go around. You couldn't possibly spend all this in your lifetime, and probably not, like, your grandkids are going to be fine, right? But it doesn't matter. There's still, no matter how much or how little you have, we wrap a bunch of fear around money. So. So, I just Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, so I'm reading through your book, and by the way, your personality shines through in the way you write. I mean, just listen to this, guys. I dig the written word. I mean, I dig words, period, right? Like, people don't write like that. I just love to see personality shining through in a topic like this where it's, you know, we're able to see who you really are. And I mean, you haven't like lost your sense of humor. And so throughout this book, I didn't read all of it, but I'm just reading through some of the bits and pieces here that's available on Amazon. You really do showcase, you know, who you are, where you come from. And also, I really want to show the people who are listening or watching, like you put it a lot of stuff that I'm reading through. You're very vulnerable. And I think being vulnerable is absolutely 100% a superpower. People latch onto your word. They listen to you. The more vulnerable you are. I try to teach that to our authors. And some people hold it close to the vest. You didn't. It seems like you kind of leaned in on that. And I'm assuming you were able to see how that connected with people. Am I right?
It's so true. I think like being an advisor for 30 plus years, you know, and working with lots of people who are charging by the hour for their expertise. I think there's this notion that like what people are paying for is this idea that you know everything. Mm-hmm. And I mean, obviously you need to be an expert in your technical field, but it is that the human element of it that makes your technical support land with people. And in my experience, you absolutely don't need to know everything. You need to be able to get what you do know to land. And the way you do that is by making more intimate connection with someone. So this idea that confidence comes from knowing everything, I think confidence comes from being okay with the fact that you're never going to know everything. And you're okay that people know that. And you still have something super valuable to provide.
So when you went through, and it sounds like your second divorce really was maybe a little bit more intertwined and harder simply because you had maybe more assets or more money or whatever. But what did you do first? I'm thinking maybe you created new habits. I mean, you're talking about new social circles, right? I mean, you're maybe new environments, new house, all of it. It's almost like you have to hit the reset button. So what was it that you did first? I'm thinking, even from my own perspective, I did not go through a major divorce, but maybe a breakup in the past. And whenever I hit my ground zero moments, I became actually more spiritual. I became a little bit more driven with my business. I had a chip on my shoulder to become more successful. So what did you do first?
Oh, Mike. So I didn't get divorced a second time. My husband died last summer, my second husband.
Oh my God. I'm sorry to hear
that. So that's okay. That's okay. I mean, so it's a whole different kind of rebuilding, and I losing a partner through divorce is very different than losing someone through death. But this idea of the fire that sweeps through your life, right? It when you're in that fire, it's just like holy crap! You're literally just trying to survive, and there's some. So there are some common elements, right? Like wildfire sweeping through your life. You're just bracing yourself. But what I did, I didn't do as well when I was 30 and I got divorced. But now when I'm just over 50 and I'm navigating the loss of another partner, all of the tools that I've developed over my life to take care of my mind, body, and spirit. Like I just freaking leaned in so hard to those. And a lot of the time it just felt like, okay, it's not working. But it's been 8 months. Over the 8 months, it's like you stick with it. I mean, I took care of my body. I leaned into friends. I had this epiphany. I was feeling very sorry for myself because my husband dropped dead. And then there was like, it seemed like just wave after wave of terrible things was happening to me. And I just thought, what have I done to deserve this? Nothing. And I was, you know, wallowing in self-pity. And I'm lucky. I live right on the edge of civilization. I spend almost every day out, at least for a bit of the day out in the mountains in Canada. And I was just hit by this, you know what, like I have a choice about how to be in this, how to view what's happening to me. And I do not need to, you know, wallow in self-pity or rage against the situation or people. And my perspective can change my experience here. And I literally, that moment, which you lay the groundwork to create resilience in your life when you're not going through horrible times, right? Like you read and surround yourself with amazing people and have a healthy lifestyle, and you build all that during times where you don't really need it. And then what I found is that epiphany, I think, came from all those years of laying the groundwork. But in that decision to say, I can manage the way I think about this, took my suffering from like a 9 to a 5. Like I was still suffering, but it was a big, big change. Sorry, that's like not a very technical answer to your
question. No, it's very, very real though. And I'm sorry, I didn't get those details right. So
no problem. I didn't mention it. I didn't lead with it.
Yeah. And I mean, that's unbelievable. Cause I actually was talking to a girl recently who had some very similar situation. And she had a very positive outlook, and I was just blown away that individuals who go through such tragedy can keep a positive outlook. And she said something very similar to what you said, where you have a choice, right? You have a choice either to really go down the dark path or to just look at it from a different angle. And did you notice that, you know, did you feel like you were becoming stronger every single day the more you just did the simple stuff, whether it's, you know, to get back into certain habits and to start focusing on your health and your, you know, the simple stuff that many people take for granted? You maybe started to analyze all your actions, all your thoughts, and maybe that's what led you to, you have these things called thought tamers in the book. And It's almost reminders of like, what's important, what's going on. These thoughts, they may be real, they may be not, but is that where this equation, this recipe came from?
Absolutely. These ideas, you know, you read self-help books and you read something and you say, oh yeah, like I believe in this idea that we have maybe not choice about the thoughts across our mind, but we have choice around the thoughts that we choose to believe and hang on to, right? So you could come across that idea from a person or a podcast or a book and think, oh, that's interesting. And I believe that. But it's like when you go through terrible times, it sinks into your cells. It moves from your mind into your body and soul. And so I think some of these things that I put in my book, I really believed intellectually, saved my arse, you know, during the really hard times. So this idea of choosing which thoughts to hang on to, of understanding that reality is this tiny little thing and our experience is more defined by our perception than by reality, which is so like teeny. Like if you think about the things that you spend your time thinking about, it's like reality is this 1% and all of the crap we make up, which is similar to money, right? Like money is this tiny little thing that we use to buy stuff over time, and then we wrap tons of stuff around it. We do that with absolutely everything in our life. So that the idea of choosing your thoughts, understanding that perception defines your experience, and deciding who do I want to be, and allowing that to inform what I do in my life, and allowing goals. And this, like, I freaking love goals, so no shade on goals at all. But this idea of saying, this is who I want to be. This is what that person does, and that the outcomes, the haves, are sort of like the cart after the horse. Those three things, which are in my book, through this hellish time of my husband just dropping dead out of the blue on one Tuesday, have like now I know they're really true. They really work even through the worst times of your life.
In your book, you talk about the Four Agreements. That's a great book. I always ask our clients and our guests, what is one book that stands out in your life that, you know, you would recommend outside of your own book? And, you know, one book that we hear quite a bit actually is the Four Agreements. So it seems like even that book really helped you out. And maybe this is something you recommend to your, I don't know, do you call them clients or just associates that you work with?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Life-changing. If you're ready to hear it.
The Four Agreements. Yeah. I listened to that on my, I was doing a trip around the United States in my Jeep, and I was listening to the Four Agreements. So damn good book.
So good. Another one is The Untethered Soul, Michael Singer. All of this stuff is incredible. That the idea that you aren't your thoughts, this concept of stepping back from your own thoughts, your own feelings, your own life, and observing it and creating that space to decide, what are you going to do with this information? He nails it, I think, in The other Untethered Soul. So that was a life-changing book for me as well.
I don't know that one, so we'll put on the list. So when you talk to these women who are going through a divorce, I think divorce is, I don't know if it's going up. I just don't know even know right now if people are getting married as much. I'm starting to see data that shows 25 to 35 year old men are not as they once did. So whether the marriage is not going up, or is divorce starting to skyrocket too, or maybe it's dropping because less people are getting married. But what have you noticed? Is there a certain trend that's happening? And what do you believe is the root cause? Is it the fact that there's social media, or is it maybe how the culture has changed where there's way more independence? Or do you think that maybe when it comes to the spiritual commitments, people don't look at divorce as such a big strike anymore, so it's actually easier to step away, or there's less commitment to one person or one partner for the rest of your life? Do you see any type of trend that is worth mentioning?
There's so much juicy stuff in there. How much time do we have? Okay, so I mean, the statistics are, they don't capture what's happening. Like, I think one of the things that's happening just in terms of the way we partner is maybe fewer people are getting married. But when you think about the breakdown of a committed relationship, I personally don't see a ton of difference whether you actually got married. But if you're in a marriage-like relationship, a committed marriage-like relationship, then the end of that relationship is as traumatic and stressful whether you had a wedding or not. Like, I personally just don't think that element of it is as defining as we talk about it. Like, it's more of a state of mind. How committed do you feel? If you feel that lifelong commitment, or the idea, the concept, like, this is my person, and that relationship ends, that's a divorce to me. And so the statistics that we track aren't capturing it. So it looks like, yeah, people are getting married less. It's the divorce rate's around 40%, like in the high 30s. And it's been relatively stable. Like, there are these kind of micro bumps. I mean, people said, oh, divorce fell during the pandemic. That's because to get divorced, you need the court to like give you a little stamp of approval. And the court was not focusing on getting people divorced, right? So that's misleading, I think. But why, just stepping back and looking at history, are marriages not lasting? Like, one, or, you know, like, divorce is more common than it was 50 years ago, of course. Okay, it's not that I'm pro-divorce. I just don't necessarily believe that every relationship should be forever. Like, that we've decided that a relationship is successful if someone dies at the end of it.
Wow.
Oh. Right.
Isn't that crazy?
And it's a failure if you're both alive and you decide to go your separate ways. Like, I do not look at my first marriage as a failure at all. Like, he was a great person. I healed. We didn't have kids. So it's not like, oh, well, I hated him, but we had kids, so it was worth it. But so like, what I'm hopeful about is that we can look at the beginning, middle, and end of relationships with a little less like restrictive perspective about how they're supposed to look while we're in them and the definition of what is success and what is failure. Because I'm telling you, I can say this because they're both dead, but my grandparents, they were married for a freaking long time. And by the end, like for sure, my grandma couldn't, I hope my dad doesn't see this, but my grandma could not stand that man. And so like on paper, it was a success, but was it really? So, I mean, I do think that a lot of us have the luxury of saying life isn't just about the bottom layer of Maslow's hierarchy, survival and security and making sure we have enough food to eat. And so once we go beyond that into like really wanting, I hate the term like living our best life, but you know what I mean? I think we have higher expectations about that relationship, which could can define our life. And for a lot of us now we have the freedom. We don't necessarily need one another in the way in particular that women needed men before, sorry to be gender stereotyping, but you know, I think when roles were so defined and separate, both of us, like men and women, so just speaking in heterosexual relationships, you kind of needed one another. Like the guy barely remembered his kids' names and had no idea when they went to bed, and the girl couldn't make a living, right? So that element of it is gone, which I personally don't think is a bad thing. Like I want to be in a relationship out of want and expansion and not like need.
So do you think that, and to avoid divorce, just by seeing the journey, one way to do that is to make sure, I mean, whether it's like a renewal every year or just a reminder that we're all trying to go to the same place. We're maybe working on a business together. We're trying to maybe create this life that we both envision, and it should embody X, Y, and Z, right? I see individuals who are entrepreneurs and they struggle because their partner maybe signed up to be their wife or their husband whenever they were a 9-to-5er. And all of a sudden, now they're into this entrepreneurial space where it's based off of your personal development. And personal development is so high in the entrepreneur space that sometimes you outgrow your partner. And maybe sometimes you're going somewhere that you know is the right way based off of the circles that you're in, but your partner doesn't see everything. And so there's two different levels of development going in two different directions. And that's a recipe for disaster. So if you're going to build a life, make sure the partner is on the same page every step of the way, wanting to go to the exact promised land that you both have in your minds. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I think I would say after, you know, being in two very long relationships, I was with my second husband for just over 20 years. There's an inherent value in long-term commitment, in being with someone who really knows you, you really know them, and being accepted and giving acceptance. And there's real value in this like holding of one another's memories, rooting you in your own history and relationships that you develop together with, if it's your kids or your extended family and friends. And so I see the depth of value of being in a long-term relationship. And there is a cost that comes with that. Like the cost is you're never going to be totally aligned. And, you know, and to say, okay, and over time you'll be more and less aligned. And so I think you're right. I think it's vital that you can talk openly with your partner about that, and that you have the courage to allow some elasticity in your relationship to navigate those times where, okay, we're going to comfortably have a little bit less overlap in our Venn diagrams. Like my life is going in a somewhat different direction from yours. We're going to create some space for one another and find ways to still stay connected. But I think that that takes great courage. Like, it's so bizarro to me that we don't have the courage to say what we need from our partner, if it looks somewhat out of the box, like, you know what, I don't want to live with you for the next few years, or I need some space, fill in the blanks. We're too afraid to have that conversation, but we get divorced instead. Like, that's have the conversations, create something that works for you, even if it doesn't look like a typical scenario. Because that's a lot better than just going right to throwing up your hands and saying, let's just find someone new. You're going to have not the same issues, but the same idea of you're not always going to be in lockstep with one another.
When I get to work with people in their books or on their businesses, really smart people always say, always have an extra strategy in mind. And what that means is, even if you're not going to sell your business, have a plan in place to sell it if it ever comes to that point. And then have your new identity on the other side of that business ready to go, or start planting seeds. So if you ever sell it, you don't walk into the woods and you're completely lost again. And usually if people sell their business without a plan on the other side, it does lead to major catastrophe, bad habits, right? Drinking and gambling, and they're just kind of lost. So reason why I bring that up is because years ago, I was totally in love with this one girl who got away from me in college. And then years later, I met up with her and she just went through the breakup of the guy that I lost to in college. So it was like 10 years later. They never got married, but they had a breakup. And I was sort of the rebound guy, right? But I could sense that she was lost. Her whole identity was tied to that relationship, and there was no passion to do a hobby or anything. So there was a moment of time where it was like she was figuring herself out, and it was just trying new thing after new thing, got into the fitness world. And it was like she didn't know herself because her whole identity was that relationship, probably thinking they were going to get married at some point. And I mean, I could see it in her eyes. I could hear it in her voice, that it just was like a figuring out who am I point. And I think that's very similar to people who sell their business and they don't know who they are because that's what they've been doing for the past 10 years. So what would you recommend to somebody who's potentially about to get married or is married, who, even if they're not thinking about divorce right now, maybe set up their life for success no matter what happens? What would you recommend to do? And maybe if you could, what would you not do after you go through divorce?
Yes. I mean, this is the pragmatic accountant in me, but I think, like, don't put all your eggs in one basket in your life, period. And that's in a relationship or in your business, because you lose your personal resilience. So for me, you know, I have two daughters too. I think about, like, what do I want for them in their life, in their marriage or marriage-like relationship? And I think that not only does it make you more resilient if something ends, to maintain a rich and diverse life, but it enriches whatever it is that you're doing. So whether you're an entrepreneur running a business or you're a wife or a husband in a marriage, when you have other meaningful things, and I'm not saying it has to be this huge breadth, but deep things that are adding other elements to your life, it enhances this key central thing, whatever that central thing in your life is, if it's your marriage or your business, because you have more soul food. Like, if you're just working the business, or you just see yourself as wife, and I mean, I'm just speaking from the perspective of a woman, like, I'm wife and mom, and that's what I am. Then, like, it's like eating the same food all the time. And even if that's really good food, it's not full. So I think you lack resilience, period. And I'm not saying that it's about, like, being negative and saying I have to prepare for failure, but life includes massive changes that you cannot predict. And so to have, to me, a life that's resilient to those massive changes and way more soul food and energy to put into that, whatever that primary, you know, thing or focus is in your life, that's a win-win. Like I really do feel like moving through my husband's death, but even if we had divorced, like I have incredible friends. I am super close to my kids. I have an amazing career. I have the imposter syndrome when I say I'm an athlete, but I'm very focused on athletics in my life. Like all those things, it doesn't, like, it's still freaking terrible that my husband died, but these things support me. If I had nothing and my husband and he was everything for me, it would be really freaking hard. Yeah, or to your point, if you sell your business and that was your identity, your social life, your sense of purpose and self-worth, and now you sold it, like, oh my gosh. Yeah. Then the hole, you're right. You're so desperate. The hole is so huge and so vast. Everything can get sucked into it. And the easiest things to put in it are probably not the best for you, right? Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Not that those things are bad, but if you... if you have nothing else going on, it can be risky.
Yeah. Yeah. You'll start to, you know, reach out and just have any type of dopamine hit. You're going to go for it. Right. Just to kind of forget the pain. And you're right about that. It's almost like individuals tie themselves to one thing and they forget about their passions, their hobbies, their childhood dreams, and they put it all on hold or they forget about it completely. And that's why I look at maybe divorce for some people is a wake up call. Wait a second, I forgot about all these things. Now let me build the life that I truly want. And it is a starting over at a certain age, but it's better late than never, in my opinion. And you can really go after that business or get on the track or start swimming or go after those fitness goals that you have always wanted to pursue. And maybe that's it could be an absolute blessing. Carl Jung, a clinical psychologist, you know, says ground zero moments are potentially the greatest thing that can ever happen to you. And you actually need them sometime to do that self-awareness check of who are you really. So
true. Horribly uncomfortable and valuable.
Yeah. And so you have a business. It's called LaValle and Associates Advisory Services, right? And so you're located, I believe, in West Vancouver. If people reached out to you, what could you do for them? And, you know, at what stage would they contact you?
So I don't actually do a ton of divorce advisory work anymore. I hate to say this, but I take every call. Like I try to help. So if you're navigating divorce, in particular, if you're women navigating sort of financially complex divorce, you can always reach out to me through my website and I will at least, provide sort of like next steps for you. When my husband passed away, he and I had run a couple of businesses together. And so I've had to step in and take a more active role in those businesses. And that's taking up more of my time. So I'm not taking on new clients. But like I said, it's a passion beyond getting paid by the hour. And so I still help people. But yeah, largely the way that I'm helping now is by sharing information sort of more broadly. So books and talking with people like you and sharing on social media.
Nice. Okay. So guys, if you want to check out our website, it's kellylavallee.com. That's LAVALLIE.com. And social media, looks like you're active on TikTok and Instagram. So let me take a look at your Instagram here. Oh,
it's really TikTok.
Just TikTok, it looks like. All right. Yeah, so what's your TikTok handle? Because most people, I think, are starting to jump on the TikTok bandwagon, in my circle at least. So what is that?
They better hurry, you know, in case they're going to ban it.
Yeah, that's very true.
Okay. It's Kelly underscore LaValle. It's so bad that I had to look that up. But
by the
I'm
way,
not a
guys,
good
I'm looking at it right now. 281,000 followers, 5.3 million likes. I need to follow you on TikTok here. Okay. Very nice. Oh, wait a second. Look at your hashtag. You do not run from your personality. I freaking love it. Hashtag old broad wisdom. Hashtag old broad fitness. Hashtag old broad beauty is your Insta or your TikTok bio. Hilarious.
Yeah.
Wow. Phenomenal. And I will say, you know, surprising that you say you're even over 50. So you look great for your age, and the fitness level must be unbelievable. What do you like to do? Are you a swimmer, biker? I have not seen what's on TikTok. So what's your go-to? Are you a runner? I'm a runner.
I've had, you know, I'm old enough to have had a few different iterations, but I was a gym rat, started weightlifting in my teens. And so did some, actually for about a decade in my 40s, competed in like bikini, you know, bodybuilding basically, but bikini competition, and also like overlapping that with running, but now mainly hiking and doing more endurance hiking. So it's we're so lucky here to be right like on the edge of the mountains, and so I spend a ton of time doing that.
Nice. Excellent. Guys, check out her book. I'm a big runner, and I'm always in the woods. So you are in Vancouver, West Vancouver. It's beautiful in that area, so you might as well make the most of it. Yeah. And the book, guys, Untying the Knot, Protecting Your Emotional and Financial Health During Divorce. Easy to find on TikTok, on the website, and get in touch with her if you have any questions. But Kelly Lavallee, thank you so much for being here and talking about this and, you know, being so vulnerable with us.
Thanks so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Remember, guys, $1 million book will lead to a $1 million life. Right on.